Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Stats out there. Overnight ratings of yesterday's final round of the PGA Championship up 69% over last year's final round. Tiger, no doubt, worth something when it comes to television ratings in a tournament. Probably the best thing golf has going. Feel bad for Brooks Koepka, who wins the thing. I guess I shouldn't feel bad for him. He walks off. He's got a major championship winner. He doesn't seem bothered by it. Zach Kiefer of the Indianapolis Star was there. Zach, what was that like?
It was surreal. I mean, I had not been to that many golf tournaments. I've been to a couple, but Sunday at a major with Tiger back in the hunt in a situation where a lot of people thought they'd never see again. There was an unbelievable amount of energy. I've been on the field for a lot of big games, NFL, NBA, all that stuff. This was insane. I mean, the multiple players said it was the biggest crowd they'd ever seen, and it felt like that.
It looked like an inauguration.
I mean, right. It was, and everybody knew who they were rooting for. Every player knew who everybody was rooting for. You know, Brooks Koepka said you could tell the other roars from the Tiger roars. And Justin Thomas said, you know, I was across the course and I could tell Tiger made a birdie. It was that kind of feeling. It was just surreal to see him do it the way he did it with the putts he made and the run he made. It was unbelievable. It was absolutely everything CBS wanted, that's for sure.
I hear the narrative today. Some people are saying, look, this is media driven. This is the media wants this story. Break him down, build him up. But it wasn't the media out there on the course following him around. What is it about Tiger's story that speaks to people?
Everyone loves a comeback story, right? I mean, they love it. I mean, this guy was sort of exposed for living this, you know, it wasn't a perfect life he was living. We'll leave it at that. But the one thing that's been refreshing from my perspective is, look, Tiger's honest about how he really thought it was over. I mean, we asked him, you know, like when you, even like last winter, could you have ever foreseen competing in two major championships this year? Not, I mean, he competed in all four, but literally making a run at the win in the last two, the British and now here at the PGA. And he said, with what swing? He couldn't even swing a golf club as recently as this winter. And there's just so many steps to go beyond that, you know, getting the swing ready for the tour, getting ready for that kind of level of competition, being able to putt and all that stuff. He didn't know if he'd ever be able to play the game again, regardless of whether it was competitive or not. And to make a run like he did, I mean, this was the best final round he's ever played in his life. This was the lowest score he's ever had at the PGA Championship. I mean, these were things he wasn't supposed to do, and that's attractive to people. I mean, Brooks Koepka said it best, to get back to your original question. He's the reason the entire generation of his plays golf. I mean, Koepka, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, these guys are the golfing beasts that Tiger Woods created when he was in his prime and then late 90s and 2000s. I mean, that's literally what we're watching here. And it's just great theater.
Zach Kiefer with us, Indianapolis Star. He was there, covered the PGA Championship. On Saturday, I was watching the tournament on television. I could see Tiger. He did everything but putt on Saturday. And I thought to myself, gosh, if he had made two or three of those putts, this thing would be really interesting. What changed for him Saturday overnight? What was the mindset? Was there no pressure on him? Why do you think he performed so well?
Yeah, did you see the way he rolled up to the course on Sunday with his hat backwards and his sunglasses on? It almost looked like you knew he was going to bring the fireworks. Look, he made putts on Saturday. It just made him on the front nine. He couldn't make anything on the back nine. He still shot 66, which is nothing to sneeze about. Look, there's a couple moments like that. Look, he started the tournament double single. I mean, so double bogey, bogey. So, you know, if he doesn't do that, where are we at on Sunday afternoon? But there were some, I don't want to say gimmies, but there were some putts on Saturday afternoon. There's no reason he couldn't have made those. I think the reason he did get hot is the greens were gettable. I mean, he was dialing in with those irons. He could just throw it up there, and he knew it would stick. They weren't fast. They were receptive. He just could go at every pin. And then if you've got, you know, 5-foot putts are a lot more makeable than 12-foot putts. And he was able to make the 12-footers and even a couple longer than that because there wasn't a lot of break. They were soft. They were a little bit slower, and he could just go right at the hole. And you saw the fist pumps, and you heard the roars inside your whole body when we were on the course. And it was fun to see him do it, but there's definitely a couple of swings he'd like to have back, I can tell you that.
When did you see him sort of that he was going to matter in the tournament?
He was definitely feeling his way out the first couple of days. I watched him on the range, and he didn't really like what he was doing the first couple of days. But, I mean, look, Saturdays this year, no one's better in terms of scoring average. He is the best player on tour this year in terms of Saturday scoring average. They call it moving day. That's when he made his move. And you saw the front nine on Saturday when he started to get hot with the putter. I think he went out in 31, four birds of his first nine holes, maybe even five. That's when everything changed. And I thought Brooks Koepka was going to win the whole time. I really did after Friday's round because he's just unflappable. But when Tiger made the run, you could feel the entire tenor of the tournament change because there's nothing like a golf tournament when he's in the hunt.
Zach Kiefer with us, Indianapolis Star. All right, the question in like 48 hours went from, you know, is Tiger going to matter to, yes, he does matter, to can he win again in a major? You like his chances now to win again?
Yeah, and these are things I never thought I'd say. I mean, to be honest, but I do. I think he's going to win again. I think he's going to win a major championship again. It's going to be really hard because it's really different coming in second and coming in first. I mean, it sounds like it's just one place, but it's a huge mental hurdle. It's a big gap. It's a bigger gap than the scoreboard says it is. But he's right there. I mean, he had the lead with 8 to go, with 8 holes left in the British, and just made some uncharacteristic chipping mistakes, and then Sunday, if Koepka isn't absolutely perfect, which he was, you know, Tiger's right there. So I think he's going to win another major. You know, he plays so well at Augusta. That's always, always, always a threat there. The only, you know, bottom, you know, the only bad news is we got to wait so ever many months to get to Augusta because I think everybody's ready for it to start tomorrow.
Yeah, let's play it. Gary Woodland had the misfortune of being paired with Tiger in that last round. Woodland had led the tournament in the first 2 days. You think it affected him?
Yeah, it's hard to say it didn't. I think the only guy it probably wouldn't have affected is Koepka. I think Koepka would have been unfazed. You know, they asked him, did you feel the pressure of Tiger? How did you respond? And he said, I never even thought about it. And he played that way. But I think it affected Woodland. You know, every other guy that Tiger played with on Saturday, you know, they just faded. They just faded from relevance. It was just, let's get them to get their shot out of the way so the stage can be set for Tiger. So,
yeah.
I mean, on the 18th green, it was like Woodland didn't even exist. I mean, there was just the two of them, but everybody was looking at the guy in red.
You sound like you had fun covering this, because I know I've covered a lot of events at the Oregonian, and there becomes, you know, you see a lot of the stuff that looks similar over and over. This was really different for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was there for USA Today, and look, I mean, I cover the Colts every day, so I'm an NFL guy, and so this was, one, a nice break from training camp, and two, I mean, everyone roots for a story, right? I mean, at least in this business, I mean, this is the story in golf. And it was just great theater. I mean, literally when he's up there and you've got 40,000 people within eyes of you, completely silent, rooting for the same guy. The drama's real. It was something to see. It was unbelievable to be there.
All right. Appreciate your time. Zach Kiefer, USA Today and the Indianapolis Star. Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Have a good one.
Hey, by the way, Andrew Luck, is he a good fantasy pick? Oh, he left. I was just going to ask him about Andrew Luck. It's my bad. Do you like Andrew Luck? It's a fantasy pick.
He's a good sleeper.
Because I think you can get him late. You don't have to pick him high. You know, I think he'll go after the first wave of quarterbacks. But you know, I don't know. The Colts are building that thing to win without him, kind of. You know, they're not going to ask a lot of him.
But that's a good thing. That's a good thing when you get into fantasy football.
Because if not asking too much from him too early, that means he's going to come on late, and that's what you look for.
They did something really smart while he was out. They built that team. They said, look, we're going to build this team to play defense and run the football. And then when Andrew Luck comes back, we can layer him on top of it. It reminds me a lot of when the Denver Broncos, who tried for so long to win with just John Elway, when they finally committed to going, look, we got to play defense and we got to run the football with Terrell Davis. And all of a sudden, Elway was so much better because he had Terrell Davis there. All right, our big splash. The one thing you need to know in sports is coming up, and I promise you, it's not Tiger. Portland State football coming off an 0-11 season that nobody's talking about except for me. Vikings will play all but one of their home games this season in Hillsboro. They badly need a new home stadium in the downtown corridor, but they got a problem. Have you looked at real estate prices? Like, can you get 10 acres in downtown Portland?
Are you kidding me?
To build a stadium? So you have a problem. So what should Portland State do? If you're Portland State, what do you do? Bobby Bean, where do you put a stadium? If you're going to build a stadium, let's say Portland State gets together with Nike and they decide we're going to build a stadium. Where do you build it? What do you do? Who does it serve?
I might get involved with some of the high schools down here, like Lincoln or something like that, and combine that and get the state involved. And it's a state school. Portland's a state school. You've got high schools here. They can play Thursday and Friday nights. It's a great Portland State play Saturday. Somehow combine all that and get as much money donated as you can. Get some people in there and see if you can get something, some money raised, I guess.
Let's go to our resident Portland State expert, Alabama Adriana, also known as Oregonian Adriana. You are a Portland State student. Where do you want to go? Do you want to go out to Hillsboro and watch your team play?
Personally, no, because I will be like living on campus next year and I'll be a commuter, or I won't be a commuter anymore because I won't have a car anymore. So I don't want to have to drive anywhere. I want it to be somewhere that I can reach locally. Like,
do students want to go? Are they aware that there's a football team? Do you hear, do you hear talk about it on campus?
We're aware, but, it's not really something that is as big of a deal as maybe Oregon or Oregon State. For me personally, I just love college football, so that's why I would like to go.
Yeah, she's been to like an Iron Bowl, and she's about to go see Montana play Portland State out in Hillsboro. And that's going to be a rude awakening. She's going to be like all geared up, got her face painted. She's going to be ready for game day.
Tailgate ready. Yeah. Tailgate
ready. You want to get the students to know about this football team. Get them to play downtown. Get them somewhere they can walk to. It's like their basketball team. That they got that all souped up, and it's going to be rocking in there. So I think they need the same thing down here. And besides, they're college kids. Like it or not, they'd like to, you know, they'd like to partake in some adult beverages before going to a game. If you put it downtown, they can literally walk from campus to the game, walk back home.
It needs to be. I think the answer is Lincoln High School right there with that, right near where the Timbers play, right across the street from there. I mean, it's a walkable, it's an easy walk. I think that the other thing that they're going to have to come to grips with is the size of the stadium. I looked at Sacramento State's size of their stadium. I was with Art Edwards at KGW last night. He was like, hey, what other small stadiums are there? You know, what are the smallest college football stadiums in the country? And we found some places that were like 2,500 seats, 3,000 seats, some small colleges. But I thought Sacramento State was small. I'd been there. It holds 26,000, their stadium.
Wow.
They built it. They built around it and added seating for the Olympic trials when they had them there for track and field. I think a nice stadium that holds 7,500 to 10,000 is enough for Portland State. I know that's not going to, you know, it's not going to wow the athletic department to say, oh, we only have 10,000 seats to sell. But I think if you think in that scope, you can suddenly combine efforts with some of the PIL schools and go, look, you don't have anywhere to play at like four different schools. They all have to play during the day. They have no lights. They have. So let's build a stadium that's central to the Portland public schools. Let's get buy-in. Let's get some tax dollars. And let's get some buy-in from either Nike or Adidas. Whoever wants to get involved in helping put a legacy project together that would serve Portland State and the Portland public schools and get a hell of a lot of visibility come, you know, high school playoffs, concerts. Yeah, you're going to get some blowback because I think Providence Park is sort of positioned with their stadium expansion for the Timbers to maybe hold some outdoor concerts there in the summertime. But this would be a stadium that serves the city, not just Portland State, because I think Portland State kind of exhausted itself building the Viking Pavilion, the basketball thing that's going to open up. I think right now their mind's blown with the idea of, like, now we got to find a football stadium. And you got a football program that went 0-11 last year. They're not folding up the program. So they got to figure this out. You cannot play games at Hillsboro. You can't bring recruits out to games like that and be like, this is where we're going to play. Intel's out here. Let's go to Ryan in Vancouver, who's called in. Ryan, what's up?
Hey, John. I don't really know the logistics of everything, but I'm just curious about Portland State getting involved with the Portland Diamond Project and putting a stadium. I mean, if you're going to do an entertainment area down there by the Motor Center or whatnot, would that work out with getting this, you know, students to come is
basically
right.
Yeah, and the question's a good one, and it's one that I raised. I could just see right now Portland State's athletic department listening to this show and just nodding, going, yeah, that works for us. See, they need to be creative because they're not going to be able to build a stadium on their own. They're certainly not going to be able to build a downtown Portland stadium on their own. So if you're the Portland Diamond Project, here's a couple of smart plays you might make. You might go to Portland State and go, look, if we build this baseball venue, we will, of course, look at how it can serve Portland State. They also would have to go to the high schools in the area and go, look, hey, there's an opportunity for you to play some big games here and make it a project that serves, you know, because the baseball stadium sitting empty, and they've done it with, you know, they did it in San Francisco with AT&T Park, Pac Bell Park, played some football games there. I went and saw some football games there. And before Levi Stadium came on the scene, it was kind of a destination for a Bay Area bowl game. It could bring a lot of possibilities to the Portland metropolitan area, and that's a great idea. Let's go to Bruce, who's in Portland. Bruce, what's up?
John, hey, just listening to you talk about Portland State. Hey, you know, Lincoln is scheduled to be rebuilt. They're starting groundbreaking in 2020. It is scheduled to be completed in 2023. The school is going where the athletic field is now, so it would be a perfect opportunity to put the track in a bigger state. Well, the track and field are going where the school is now, but they're swapping them essentially. So it'd be a good idea to maybe get in touch with the school district now and discuss maybe a bigger stadium there. Unfortunately, the whole project, you know, the $750 million bond that passed is way over budget. There's a board meeting tomorrow night to discuss the future of Lincoln and the rebuild, but it'd be a good time to try and get on board. The Diamond Project, I think, is too many years out.
Yeah, doesn't solve anything, yeah.
Perfect setup.
Yeah, I think you're right. Hey, look, Portland State, get on the phone to the Portland Public Schools. Get on the phone to Lincoln High School today and say, look, how can we partner? Who can we bring together? I think everybody turns and looks at Nike at a moment like that, too. Everybody kind of turns and goes, okay, Nike, are you more than a business? Which they are. They're a business. Their job is to sell apparel and sell sneakers and to turn a profit for their shareholders. But are you more than a business? Because Nike, in a lot of ways, redoing basketball courts, investing in youth sports, Adidas has been the same way. I think we all turn and we kind of go, all right, you're headquartered here. Can you solve a problem here? All right, you got the bald-faced truth. I promise you a big splash ahead. Plus, we go to Maryland sports next. Jeff Ehrman is going to give us the latest on what's going on. What the hell is going on at Maryland? Could anybody have seen this coming? And also, we'll talk college
football. We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Faced Truth.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.